You know Dasher, and Dancer, and Prancer, and Vixen, Comet, and Cupid, Donner, and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
Ho, ho, hello, listeners, and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the shows that shaped our childhood. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my partner in podcasting, Mary Mark Williams.
Ho, ho, ho.
It's that time of year again, listeners. It is the festive season, and it's time for a Christmas special. Not just any Christmas special this year. We've looked at a lot of them and a lot of classics as well. We've done The Grinch. We've done Charlie Brown, or Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. We've done
He-Man and She-Ra.
Yeah, we've done He-Man and She-Ra. We've done all the classics. But for some reason, we never got around to the 1964 Rankin and Bass Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which is as much a part of Christmas for me as anything you can name. I have watched this thing every year for as long as I can remember. So this isn't so much a trip down memory lane for me. This isn't so much a nostalgia thing, although this show does give me a big nostalgia hit every year. But I have literally watched this every year for as far back as I can remember. So it's time to take a look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I have seen it, and when I put it on earlier on, because it recognized it straight away, but I don't think I've watched this for fucking ages. I mean, I think I may have been about 10 the last time I saw this. Yeah. So this was a really interesting one for me because I remembered it without any issues. But it's been a fucking long time, and actually there were bits I'd missed in it before, which I picked up going, oh, okay, that's better than I remember.
Yeah, it's just been ever-present for me. I've spoken on the show before, I think when we did Frosty the Snowman, I spoke about it as well, how I used to have this VHS tape that was taped off cable, right? Because I specifically remember this wasn't on, like, BBC or ITV in this country. It was on the tape that I had. It had been on, like, the Children's Channel or something. And I had this tape, and it had Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, Little Drummer Boy, The Year Without a Santa Claus. It just had all of them. It was like a long play tape. Had them all on. And I'd watch it.
Long play tapes, that takes me back.
Yeah, as a kid, I would just watch it year round. But then as I got older, it would be like a Christmas thing. I'd dig this out. Yeah. And pretty soon it dropped off as well. And like because it was a VHS, like you got to scan through if you want to find something. Now, luckily, Rudolph was the first thing on the tape. It was always my favorite. So I know most people like The Year Without a Santa Claus, and that's certainly probably the big one.
Maybe we'll look at that next year.
Yeah, but Rudolph was always kind of my favorite, right? So I would always watch this, and then, like, as luck would have it, just as this tape starting to fucking wear out, along comes DVDs, and then along comes the internet. So I had a hooky version for a few years, which took, back in these days, fucking hours. It probably cost me a fortune to download this fucking thing, and it was really low res. It was terrible quality, but I managed
to cheaper to buy the DVD.
Well, the DVD wasn't out at this point, so I had to download it and burn it.
Okay.
And then there was a DVD version that came available. I want to say early 2000s. I think it was probably about 2005, 2006. DVDs were like definitely starting to edge out by the time this thing came out on DVD, and I picked it up for like $2.99. in my local supermarket. And so then I've just watched it every year. I've gone back to watching it on the internet this year because my DVDs are currently buried in a cupboard somewhere. And as much as I love this thing, I was like, can I be fucked to go rooting through all the DVDs when I know it will be available on YouTube? The answer's no. However, listeners, if you are going to watch this and you don't own it legally, there are plenty of places you can get it. You can get it on Amazon as well. Please don't.
That's what I did.
Yeah, please don't just go and watch it on YouTube. It is absolutely worth your money not to bury the lead here. You know, we do always encourage people to pay for content. So that's my history with it. Your history is quite interesting then, Mark. If you've had a big period of time where you haven't watched it, what does that feel like to go back? Because this, to me, like I said, this is a stone cold classic. This is just...
It was really interesting because, I remembered... Obviously, I mean, the song is ever present, so you know the story inside out anyway. Yeah. But going back and like seeing, I'd forgotten about the doll with the Misfit Toys, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I'd forgotten about her, and like, I remembered the train with square wheels. That was always in my mind, I don't know why, but that's always there. But I'd forgotten about the doll, I'd forgotten about the Jeremy in the Box.
Yeah.
I don't know how. It was just, no, it wasn't in my head. So when he popped up, no pun intended, I was like, oh, fuck me. there it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this was kind of, I watched this afternoon. I was working from home, and I occasionally will park my ass on the sofa in front of the TV with my laptop on my lap, and I'll be tapping out a report while I'm watching TV, because why the fuck not?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I had this on, and I ended up having to pause it, go and shut my laptop up, put myself as being away from the keyboard, and just sit down and watch it, because I was just so distracted by it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the two. And I always multitask. I will always sit down and do something else while I'm watching TV. Unless we're doing some of the better Mario, because you and Helen take far better notes than I do anyway, so I need to really concentrate on that one.
Yeah.
And we do it as a play-by-play, so you kind of need to focus on it. But generally, I will sit there and go, right, okay, well, I need to be doing this email, right? I'm reading this, or I'm doing something else. I'm never watching anything else or listening to anything else. So it's the show, whatever we're watching, the show or the film is on,
mm-hmm.
but I can be reading something else or scrolling through the internet or whatever else. I couldn't do that. I had to sit down and go, fuck, right, okay, this is the thing.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a hug.
It is, isn't it? Right, it's fucking magic, this show.
This whole thing, I've seen it lots, and then I hadn't seen it since, I'd say, for the best part of 30 years, if not longer.
Yeah.
So coming back to this, it was like seeing like a relative I haven't seen for a fucking long time.
Yeah.
And one of the ones who gives like the good presents, not the aunt who tries to snog you.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah, like I said, I watch it every year, but even so, like when it comes out, and I have a list of Christmas films that I watch every year. You know, I watch Nightmare Before Christmas multiple times every year, not just at Christmas. But I do always watch it probably two or three times over the holiday season as well. Muppets Christmas Carol, I always watch. You know, this, I always watch. The Grinch, I always watch. But the two that always just grab me and instantly give me that big, warm, Christmassy nostalgia hug is this and there's The Grinch. And for different reasons. Like, the Grinch is absolutely steeped in tradition for me. It is Christmas Eve morning, and it is not Christmas Eve without watching The Grinch. That's just something that's been ever present in my life. This I can watch at any given point over the festive season. But you get that Christmassy feeling from it. And I think it's so intrinsically linked to my childhood. And it's probably the same with you, Mark. It's just that the span of time has kind of, you know, so going back to it now has kind of transported you back to that time and place. And it does that for me every year, even though I watch it every year. It's just so, that VHS and our old TV downstairs with the wooden paneling and the big clicky buttons and the top loading grey plastic VHS player that I used to put it in. Like, and the cheap ass foil Christmas decorations that would be hanging from this, it's all there. Whenever I watch this show, it's really something fucking special. And you know, I think it's special for a lot of reasons, right? I think there are generations that have grown up with this. This was released in 1964, so there are at this point in time there are literally generations that have grown up with this thing. It's never really gone away. Certainly not, I know, overseas. I know it's part of Freeform's big Christmas lineup and stuff in America. So it's on multiple times again during the holiday season every year. You don't so much see it on TV here, but it's permeated now. You'll see the image of Rudolph around. The DVDs are available.
I think Channel 4, they've started doing a lot of older stuff, because their Christmas output has always been... Channel 4 have always had the thing, they've got to be subversive and edgy and all the rest of it. But actually, they're starting... No, they, the last couple of years, they've done The Snowman, Snowman and the Snowdog. They've done various different Christmas-based things, going back to Frosty and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me if this had popped up, but I'm fairly sure I've seen this version of Rudolph on an advert in the last year or so on Channel 4. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's been part of their Christmas output. Either that or it's on all four.
Yeah, it could be. It could very well be. But, you know, it's definitely... I think even the image of... Obviously, Rudolph the song was around before this, and Rudolph the character was a book before that. So the image of Rudolph, you know, he is just a reindeer with a red nose at the end of the day. But I think more often than... Like, for instance, my daughter's Christmas card downstairs has Rudolph on the front. Now, it's not licensed in any way, but it is this Rudolph. And unmistakably so. Like, this Rudolph has a design and a look. Yeah. And it's this Rudolph. It's not just any old reindeer with a red nose slapped on it. It is the Rankin Bass Rudolph. Like, it's absolutely permeated. You know, in the same way that for me, and especially as a Disney fan and a Disney Parks fan, I think this is testament to the show more than anything else. When somebody mentions the Yeti or the Abominable Snowman to me, I see Bumble. I don't see the Yeti from the Matterhorn or the Yeti from Expedition Everest. I don't see a Yeti from a horror movie. I see Bumble. When you say Abominable Snowman, this is exactly what he looks like to me.
If you go back probably 3-4 years, or maybe just before COVID, there was a film called Abominable came out. It was a DreamWorks thing, I think.
Yes, yes.
And that Yeti was based on Bumble.
Right.
Quite clearly, the design of that character was based on that. And if you look at Monsters, Inc.
I was going to say, the one in Monsters, Inc. always reminds me of Bumble as well.
And it's they've gone, right, okay, that's what people have grown up with.
Yeah.
That's the Abominable Snowman people recognize. So unless you want to make a horror version, where it's all fucking claws and teeth and all the rest of it, this is what people are going to expect to see, because they've grown up with this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Same with, as you say, with Rudolph. People know that this is what Rudolph looks like. Where people know, certainly people of our generation and older, you show them, you tell them, you talk about the Grinch, they see the fucker that's on my T-shirt. They don't see Jim Carrey. They don't see the new one. They see the original hand-drawn one that was that Boris Karloff did.
Yeah. Although that Jim Carrey incarnation of the Grinch seems to be seeping in the popular culture.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's fucking old now by film standards.
Well, this is the thing. Like, we say our generation, but we're the older generation now. There are generations that have been brought up to recognize that version, as I'm sure in 20 years' time, there'll be generations that recognize the DreamWorks version. So that just is what it is, unfortunately. But you're right. I think there are, like I said, for Rudolph, you know, we are now 60 years and change into this. It'll be 60 years next year, in fact, won't it? So there are literal generations. So it's understandable that it's kind of broken through popular culture. But it's not just the character design. You know, it isn't just that this is what Rudolph looks like. This is what Bumble looks like. Fuck, even this is what a snowman looks like in animation. It's not
fucking Rip Torn.
Yeah, it's not just that. It's the whole look of it. The Rankin Bass animation style, if you like.
Yeah.
The stop motion. And I'm going to say it, it's not good. Let's be honest. It's not. It's cheap, right? They shoot on twos. So you get, you know, especially with stop motion animation, when you look at more modern stuff, I say even modern, it's an old film now, but if you look at the sort of stuff that Henry Selick was doing with Nightmare Before Christmas, right, where it's being shot frame for frame and the movement is very, very fluid, and particularly now when you get a lot of CGI enhanced stop motion stuff, it's very fluid motion. This, they're not photographing every frame. They're photographing every two frames, and that's why this has such a... It's like a juttery... It's almost like you could do it yourself with action figures.
Yeah.
But there's something so charming about it.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you can see it behind me, right in the corner. It's an animation tool I bought from like fucking Smith's or somewhere. It was in the kids' creative section, but it was a fucking animation tool and I thought it was fun, so I bought it. And basically it's a 9-inch mannequin that's fully poseable. But it's got like symbols on it, and you connect it to an app on your phone or your iPad and it will map those symbols.
Right.
So if you pose it and take a picture of it using this app, if you then move the arm through 90 degrees, as long as it can still see the symbol, it will animate it between the two points.
Okay.
But it's clunky and it judders and things like that. But it's to get kids into, you know, identifying how it works and the fact that you move this to this and then the more pictures you take, the more fluid it is. But it's a really interesting thing. But again, that doesn't. Things like that. I mean, I think I paid like £20 for it a couple of years ago, but you don't get that without having this stuff and these techniques mastered over many, many years. And yes, okay, I mean, this was 1964, and it looks fairly rubbish, to be honest, in terms of the way it's animated. But the story carries it through, and then you flash forward 20 years to some of the animated stuff you're getting of the same style, and it ain't much better, to be honest.
It isn't, and I think. It all grows from this, you know, not just Rudolph. Again, you look at The Year Without a Santa Claus and stuff like that as well. This is The Little Drummer Boy as well, even. This became kind of the Rankin Bass style.
Yeah, it was very definitely, no, that was definitely them. That was definitely their
You can spot it a mile off, you know. It looks like, if you look at it technically by today's standards, it looks rubbish. But again, there's just something when you watch it that just takes you back. And as a... Yeah. as a very young child, you know, I've talked, I don't know how many times on this show, about my love for puppets and about my love of stop motion, especially. Yeah. And that comes from here, right? This is the thing. As a very young child, I've watched this for as long as I can remember. And it just, I found it captivating. You know, it wasn't just a cartoon then, you know, but it also wasn't live action. There was something about it that just grabbed me immediately. And, you know, it is ropey, but it's charming, is the thing as well. And actually, the models themselves and the character designs, you know, they're good. So it's just the animation that's slightly off. The voice work is good. You know, everything else about it is good. It's just that the animation, I don't know whether it was a budgetary thing or whether it was just the best they could do at the time.
The only thing I can think is that it's a budget thing, because the technique was there. The technique was known. The technology was there to do it. It was possibly... the only thing I can think is time and money.
Yeah, well, I mean,
in the way of it.
I know it was shipped off overseas, you know, so I know it wasn't done in-house by any stretch. All of the, I think it was China it went to, and then all of the voices were recorded in Canada. So, you know, it was completely separate. There was no joined-up thinking there, but everything does fit together. And, you know, the voice work especially, I think, is still really good, even by today's standards. You know, the performances are excellent here. And again, the characters that come through. Yukon Cornelius, for instance, is not in this very much. Mm. But he's a character I've carried with me my entire life. Like, that's what a prospector looks like to me. I know he's not technically a prospector. Well, he is a prospector.
Well, he's
a prospector in like, the far north. But that's what I get. I don't get, like, Stinky Pete or anything. You say prospector, I get Yukon Cornelius immediately.
Yeah.
You know? And that comes from the characterization more than anything else. The performance is so good. You know? Some of the voice work is a little cliched, you know. Some of it is, you know, you get your Edwin impersonators. But that's the thing. That voice specifically, like, everybody does that voice, right? And everybody knows where it comes from, but you still manage to drop it in, you know? It's nothing that wasn't being done everywhere else at the time. So it's fine. You mentioned the story carries it through. And that is definitely the story. Like, yes, it's charming, right? Even if the story was terrible, I think I would still find this charming and I would still watch it every year, because it's a joy to look at. And the songs, we'll get onto the songs in a bit, but they are, I mean, you know, Holly Jolly Christmas alone, you know, it is.
That's the price of admission right there.
It's just Christmas. There's no other word for it. It's just Christmas boiled down to its raw elements. Yeah. You know, you've got Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, classic Christmas song. But then you get Holly Jolly Christmas. You get Silver and Gold. You get all of these fucking songs that most people probably now don't even realize that they were written for this, that they came from this.
I was going to say that probably a lot of people don't realize. I mean, we generally don't do it because it leads to arguments in the car. But if we're putting Christmas songs on in the car, number two will always ask for Holly Jolly Christmas.
Yeah.
Because it's his favorite. I have no idea why. I have no idea where he heard it.
It's a great fucking song.
But that's his go-to every time.
Yeah.
The other one will just, you know, vary to whatever fucking Taylor Swift thing she can find this week. When that's on, that's the Christmas song he wants to hear. And then from there, he'll listen to whatever. But that's the one he wants to start with. That's the first one he wants to hear.
That's the gateway,
apart from Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, because, you know, he's nice.
Because he's a child, right? So, yeah, it's fine. You know, Holly Jolly Christmas. I mean, Misfits was a fucking anthem for me as a kid, just because it's the sing-song style of it as well. And then it's easily relatable.
But that's the thing,
when
you think about it, it's actually... The style of it is very sing-song, it's very light, it's very friendly, but actually what they're singing about is being rejected.
I mean, this is the thing.
There's so much fucking subtext in this film.
Oh,
it's amazing.
God. Yeah. It's actually come under... It's been critically reappraised quite a lot over the last few years. And it's coming under quite a lot of fire for how textual the subtext is. But, yeah, okay. Some of it's on the nose. But let's remember this is 1964.
And this is the thing, and this is what really fucks me off with a lot of stuff. So when you get into... We've done it in our respective degrees. I mean, I did a degree in literature. How can you guarantee what Shakespeare meant fucking 500 years ago?
Exactly.
I can't. I can infer from it, and I can take textual contextual clues and things like that. But I cannot tell you definitely what he meant by this fucking sentence.
No.
This is a film from 1964. It was a different time. Society was massively different. And you cannot judge it through the same lens as you judge things now.
You can't.
I get so fucked off when people say, oh, yeah, but this is offensive or this is racist. And yet, if you look at it in terms of where we are now, yes, you're probably right. In 1964, nobody was thinking like that.
No, they weren't.
You can't judge it for not being so progressive that it could see 60 years in the future and see the fact that, there were more than two genders all of a sudden. And that, it's not illegal to be gay anymore. Mm. And you can practice other religions. And by the way, if you're Russian, you're not going straight to hell. You can have all of that and still watch a story, listen to a story. And so, I mean, when you see a lot of these things reappraised, I used to get really wound up about it. I got kicked out of a couple of workshops when I was in uni for having the same argument. You cannot apply a current lens to something that's so fucking old.
You absolutely can't. And I know we've had this discussion many, many times on this show. We'll call out, you know, inappropriate themes and content when we see them, but we have to take them in the context of the time. It doesn't excuse them and it doesn't mean it's right, but we call it out and assess it on the value. Now, this is the opposite, and weirdly, people are still not happy. This is massively progressive for 1964. Massively. Yeah. I think it's pretty progressive by very recent standards. I would say up until about 10 years ago, some of this could be considered quite progressive. I think the issue is that the context of bullying is so front and center.
And it always will be.
Yeah.
You'll always have those social groupings, and you'll always have the outcasts, the misfits, whatever you want to call them. The people who are being victimized for no reason other than the fact they're different. You will always have that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's intrinsic to the core story, right? It's in the song, it's in the book. Like, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is essentially about bullying, so you can't get away from that. But I think a lot of the criticism that's been drawn to it is then presenting these, I don't even know what to say, these characteristics, be they physical or emotional or cultural, presenting these characteristics in such a way that they lead to bullying and send these characters on a shame spiral, which I don't get how you read that from this, I'm sorry, because I think actually this is all about just being yourself.
It's about self-acceptance and the fact that if you are comfortable in your skin and you accept what you are, other people will have no choice to do it, or they will accept you or they won't, but it's not about them, it's about yourself. And there's a very interesting piece in this where, obviously, as soon as Rudolph is born, they see his nose. Oh, we've got to cover that up straight away. We've got to hide that away. And there are so many contexts you can apply that to now. You can apply that in terms of sexuality. You can apply it in terms of gender. Certainly back in the 60s, you'd have been applying it in terms of race, where you had
race is what
children.
I get from Rudolph. Gender identity I get from Hermie. Massively. Like, it's...
Yeah. Well, I get Steve Martin from him because the Little Shop of Horrors wanted to be a dentist.
Well,
but that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it would be good if he just broke into the dentist song. But
that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So there's so many contexts you can apply this to. And actually, it's about self-actualization. That's what this film is about.
It absolutely is. You know, if
you want to start picking holes and saying, well, there are characteristics which are negative stereotypes, and because of that, they then lead into bullying, which is in itself is a negative stereotype. Yes, okay, fine, but you're missing the point.
You are, and actually, a lot of those negative characteristics don't come from our heroes. They come from the rest of the cast, who eventually, at the end of the film, do kind of realize the error of their ways. Now, there's an argument to be made there that actually they just kind of very quickly come around to accepting Rudolph because he's able to get them out of a jam.
Yeah.
Which, okay, I get that. But ultimately, acceptance is acceptance, right? And he couldn't do that if he didn't go away and learn to accept things himself first so that he can then come back and be the reindeer that he needs to be. There is so much of this. I think because the central theme is just being a misfit and not fitting in, I think, you know, those on the margins of society, for whatever reason, are able to identify for this. I mean, you know, I was far from persecuted as a child, nowhere near it, and I'm not even trying to draw comparisons to the kind of shit that, you know, somebody now who struggles with their gender may have, or somebody that even still, unfortunately, struggles with their race identity might have because of the areas they live in. However, I was a fat kid and I was a fucking nerd, so I was absolutely on the fringe of everything in school. Like, I was the fat nerd, right? So I didn't fit in either. And I can attach to this because of that. But then, definitely, like, I don't care, you know, you, like you say, you don't know what was being thought of at the time. But I don't care who you are, if you've got even an ounce of critical thinking in you, and if your eyes are fucking open, like, you can very clearly see the race comparison with Rudolph. His nose is red, it's not black, therefore it needs to be covered up so he can fit in with all the other black nose reindeers.
He can pass.
Exactly, he can pass.
That's it.
And Hermy, you know, isn't a good singer like the rest of the elves, and he doesn't make good toys.
He can't dance.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to because he wants to be a dentist. Also, he looks completely different. He has blonde hair. He doesn't have big ears. He's not an elf. He doesn't identify as an elf. He identifies as a fucking dentist. And
now, when those are your two choices, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. But in the 60s.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is shit that, you know, society unfortunately is still struggling with today.
Oh, completely.
And, you know, to draw all of this out, and even the voice work there, you know, like, yes, it's stereotypical, but he's clearly a very stereotypically effeminate homosexual. Clearly, that's played for and got.
Yeah.
You know, and I think... it's not made fun of, is the thing. Like, you know,
that's it. They're not making fun of him because he sounds different or because he acts differently. They're making fun of him because he doesn't want to make toys like the other elves.
He's not a token, is the thing. Like, he has his own storyline. Again, he gets through to self-actualization. He actually saves the day. It's him that defeats Bumble, ultimately. Yeah. He's the one that pulls Bumble's teeth out because he's been training to be a fucking dentist. He can do that.
Oh, I did worry when he was practicing on the doll, and he's like, this will hurt a bit, and he smacks it in the face with the pliers. I thought that was a little bit, I was a little bit careless.
Yeah. But, you know.
But then again, maybe he's only starting his training. Who knows?
Well, there's a time jump, isn't there? So quite possibly. Because
but what's he been practicing on? He left like a trail of fucking maimed animals behind him.
Well, I mean, they're on the island of misfit toys, right? So maybe he's just like pulling them from toys, or maybe build a snowman and pull the teeth out of a snowman. I don't know. Like, can you pull? Yeah, you could pull teeth from. No, but you could be like, this is the.
It's like learning operation. You learn how to.
Yeah.
Yeah, you learn which one it is, and you learn how to gently control the tools and whatever.
Yeah,
else.
You don't get
in the face of the players.
Yeah, you don't get the resistance, do you? So you wouldn't know how to pull. But then even if he had been training on like regular size things, when it comes to pulling out a bumble tooth, like that, you know, you need some pretty big fucking guns to pull those teeth out. They're huge.
Fucking you'd fucking jaws of life for that.
Yeah, exactly. So he's ultimately our hero. And
he saves them from Bumble.
Yeah, and I think to apply that on top of all of this in the fucking 60s is fucking brave. Because at this time, this sort of characterization, and it was, you know, it was a stereotype back then, you know, the effeminate homosexual man was a figure of fun. Especially in our culture, I'm not so sure about over the pond, but especially in British culture, all of our sitcoms at this point were built around this shit. There was always a character, you know, that was this way. So I think this is, you know, I think if nothing else, you have to applaud it for that. And to flip that around on its head then and criticize this show for that, I think is just plain wrong. I don't know how you can be more progressive, and particularly... Like, yes, now some of these themes seem quite clumsy in the way they're handled.
Yes.
But you have to remember, again, you know, we've had, you know, nearly 60 years of narrative development since then. We've moved on in our storytelling and our techniques. So, yes, we would be more subtle now.
Yeah.
But judging it for the time, I think this is excellent. And, you know, and to not... To make it central to the story without... putting a great big arrow over his head that says this is a gay man.
Yeah. This man is different.
It's huge, you know? It's absolutely huge. And even down to the fat phobia that surrounds Santa Claus as well.
Well, it's kind of the other way though, isn't it? It's he's too skinny.
Yeah, he's too skinny. She's
force feeding him. I mean, I always, and I've thought about this over the years, I haven't seen it for a long time, but I've thought of this over the years. I always likened Mrs. Claus to Lady Macbeth. It's like she's always got an agenda. She feeds him up, and then like when they do the elf song, and Santa's like, "Well, that's fucking rubbish.
Yeah.
I'm going to see the reindeers." And she's like, "Oh, don't listen to me. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You do this, you do that." And there's always that sort of very Lady Macbeth, sort of pulling strings behind the scenes, very almost Machiavellian feel to her, but in a nice way, because she's trying. No, she wants to maintain Christmas, and she's trying to keep it all going, but she's actually a cunt about it.
Yeah, I mean, Santa himself is a bit of a prick in this, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, completely.
He's like, he comes good in the end, but
you kind of need him to be, because if he's not, again, it takes focus away from the story they're telling. It takes focus away from Rudolph. It takes focus away from Hermione. So the fact that when they do come back, it's and they save the day, it's like, oh, fuck, even Santa can be wrong.
Yeah.
And again, it's this higher power has got to admit that he's wrong, because actually, I dismissed you because you had a fucking red nose, even though you were the best jumper in that first lesson. You were the only one who took off. Mm. You were the best one there. Your old man's one of my best ones, but you've got a fucking red nose, mate. You can't come on. You can't pull my sleigh. So even for him to have that climb down and say, look, okay, I was wrong. And actually that red beacon, we need that.
Yeah.
That's kind of your purpose. That's your destiny. You've kind of grown into that. And I've got to admit that I was wrong. And you never get that in anything with Santa.
No, and it's especially cutting coming from the fat cunt in the big bright red coat. Like, for him to
turn
around.
And he's not talking about me, listeners.
Yeah. For him to turn around and say, no, your nose is red. So, hang on, you're a giant fucking red beacon. Fuck you.
Yeah, you're a fat bearded alcoholic.
Yeah, fuck you.
Still not talking about me.
You said it.
I actually don't drink anymore, so it's fine.
So I think even the Santa thing, right? Like I said, there's these elements of like he's skinny and she's feeding him up, but even that Santa doesn't fit. He doesn't fit our image of Santa. Everything about this doesn't fit on purpose.
Yeah.
All of the misfit toys don't fit, apart from the doll, who was later retconned to say she has psychological issues. Because otherwise,
because you look at her and you say, "What the fuck's wrong with her?
She crazy.
Bitches be crazy, man.
Yeah, she got psychological issues. Apparently, they never explain what they are, but apparently, she's a bit, she's a little bit vacant upstairs. So that's her fucking thing.
Right. But I did not know they'd done that.
Yeah. There's some quite good interviews around this if you dig them out. Everyone's dead now, right? Everyone's dead, but there's still archive footage out there, and there are some quite good interviews where you can just see people thinking on the spot where they're like, what's wrong with the doll, because she looks normal, and you can see them just going, she was abandoned, so she's got psychological issues.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you look at the others, and like, even to look at the others to begin with, like, you don't notice the wheels on the train.
Yeah,
you don't notice the rear wheels being square until he brings it up, and as soon as he brings it up, oh, didn't I fucking see that?
Yeah.
And the fact that the Jack in the Box, the only thing wrong with him is his name is wrong.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that. But again, it's clever because you think, well, no, if you go back to Toy Story and all the sort of broken toys are being pulled apart and repaired, and they're all, you know, you've got Action Man with a Barbie arm, or you've got, you know, a spring with a duck on it, you know, off her head and stuff. It's a very visual representation, but actually they've gone, well, yeah, you can be a misfit without being broken. You don't have to have some physical deformity. And that's where you've got the difference between Hermione and Rudolph as well. Rudolph has the red nose. He has that signifier that he is different.
Yeah.
Hermione doesn't. It's all in his personality and his character.
Yeah.
And again, it's you look at this and think, fuck, this is 1964.
Yeah. I mean, they don't draw attention to it, but Hermione does have some different physical characteristics from the rest of the elves as well.
Yeah,
but
his ears are different. And
his ears are different.
They present him different. His hair sticks out and stuff like that.
Yeah, and he's got the blonde tuft. But it's that's the type of thing you notice on multiple viewings, I will say. But it's definitely for him, it's more about the fact that he doesn't fit the norm for elves.
Yeah, like, he doesn't fit the mold.
Yeah, he doesn't want to make toys for Santa. He's not, you know, dropping at Santa's feet and singing in the choir. And
it did make me laugh when you first meet him, and you're going through all the elves and they're all putting stuff together, and he gets to the end and he's got a paint pot in his hand, and he said, well, why haven't you finished that? There's a line behind you, and the line of stuff behind him hasn't finished being built yet.
Yeah,
so it's not as if he's actually done anything wrong. He can't paint anything else. He's not fucking finished yet.
I mean, still, right, having watched this, I mean, I don't know exactly how many times I've watched this, right, because I couldn't tell you what age I was when I actually like remember watching it for the first time. You know, it might have been played to me before I could even watch it, right? But I would estimate I must have watched this probably 37, 38 times at least now, right? Because I watch it every year. So accounting for the fact I was maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5, something like that, right?
Yeah, and there maybe is where you've watched it more than once, so you know, it may pop up that
there may be. Maybe,
I, well, 43, 44, 45, yeah.
I may very well watch it twice this year. I watched it without...
Stick it on with the kid, she'll love
it. Well, this is the thing. I watched it without the baby for the show because I was just like, this is work, right? This is sort of. And like,
yeah,
she's,
that's why I did it this afternoon when I wasn't in the office.
Yeah, and she's like pure chaos. Like, if I put it on, she'll be distracted during the song. She'll probably do a little dance when the songs are on. And then she'll proceed to just trash my living room and throw everything at me and climb on everything. Yeah. And I've got to watch it, right? But she'll definitely be into the like the songs and stuff. So I probably will watch it twice this year and I'll stick it on with her. Where was I going with that? I don't know. Can't remember how many times I've seen it. But I don't know where that thought was leading, because you took me down a rabbit hole with the kid. But yeah, I will definitely watch it twice this year. But I was going to go on just to circle back around to the music, because we've talked about Holly Jolly Christmas and stuff. But we were just talking about the choir. And it's, again, something like We Are Santa's Elves. You don't so much hear played on like the radio as a Christmas song, like you might with Holly Jolly Christmas or something like that. But I distinctly remember, again, as a child, every motherfucking Santa's Grotto I ever went in is playing this fucking song. Like,
yes, it's like a fucking small world for grottos, isn't it?
It is, right? They all play We Are Santa's Elves. And it's very, very short. And they just loop it and loop it and loop it. That is the best comparison, Mark. It is like listening to the theme from It's a Small World.
Yeah, where, it's painful by the end.
And I guarantee you, and my daughter's too young to go to Santa's Grotto this year because she's not going to sit still, right? She's just going to fucking pull his beard off and smack him with a bar of chocolate or something, right? So we haven't taken her. But when we start taking her probably next year, I fucking guarantee you the first grotto I walk into, I'm going to hear, We Are Santa's Elves. I just know it. I know it will happen. Because this is just part of Christmas, isn't it? There are lots of films that people think, you know, Home Alone was recently just voted like the favorite Christmas film in the UK or something. I mean, it's very good. I don't think it's the best Christmas film ever made by any stretch of the imagination. It's good. It's very good, though.
It's up there.
It's up there.
I'd say top five.
I would say probably top five as well. But it doesn't have, like, yes, it's a Christmas film, definitely. But it's episode one, our first ever Christmas special we had Kevin McCallister in. But it doesn't have that Christmas spark that I think this does. There is something different about this, and I think it's because it was implanted at a very young age. I think that's what it is, you know. So you've grown up with these carols and you've grown up with that image of Rudolph, and you've grown up with you know, this, the Burlive Snowman for a long time is what I thought Frosty the Snowman was, even though Frosty the Snowman was on the same fucking videotape as this, and I would watch Frosty the Snowman. If you said Frosty the Snowman to me, I would see fucking snowman from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
No, I'd never noticed until today, obviously, when I last saw it, I was fucking 10 or something, that it reminded me straight away of the character that Rip Torn played sort of towards the beginning of the aughts.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, sage old mentor with a fucking goatee and all that stuff. Across between him and Albert Finney in Big Fish.
Yeah, I can see that. And
it's that very sort of wise, very sage, all-knowing, but kind of not serious and not, and just like having fun with everything.
Yeah. And I can see it.
That's the impression I got from that character straight away. I'm watching it today, obviously with 30 years of fucking baggage since I saw it last.
Yeah. And also Colonel Sanders, obviously.
Of course, that's saying
right, but yeah, I can see that in as well. But again, that archetype is one we're very familiar with. But you even follow that through, and again, debatable how good it is. Certainly not as good as people say it is, but still quite a good film. When you look at the opening 10 minutes of Elf, and this carries through there as well, like that.
Yeah,
that snowman is
Elf fucking bugs me.
100. I like it. I do like it. It is a good
film.
It's
all right, but it's...
it's not what people say go it on is. About it? Yeah, agreed. It is nowhere near as good as people think it is.
To me, it's kind of like when people wank on about certain singers about being, you know, they're the best ever in particular genres.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, okay, they're good, but they're, you know, that's entirely subjective. You cannot definitively say that's the best fucking Christmas film. It's all right, but there are problems with it. Same with Home Alone, same with fucking Gremlins, same with Die Hard. I mean, any Christmas film you pick,
I think
there will be problems with it.
I think Christmas films especially, subjective. And I've just said why, right? Because it's what you're exposed to during Christmas as a child. Like, I have Christmas films that I enjoy that I've watched for the first time as an adult, right? Because they're newer films. Yeah. And they're probably better than a lot of the ones I would have watched in the 80s as a kid.
But you don't have the baggage.
But I don't have the baggage. So they'll never be my favourite Christmas films.
And the other part, and it's the same with books, same with music, same with films, is that it's entirely dependent on your genre as well. Like, I used to work with a guy who hated comedies.
Yeah, so he couldn't fucking sit through a comedy. Elf and Home Alone.
He loved action films. So stick Die Hard on, stick Gremlins on. Yeah. Gremlins was probably a push because it was probably too funny for him, but stick Die Hard on.
Lethal Weapon.
And it'd be the best Christmas film ever.
Die Hard and Lethal Weapon. There you go. Lethal Weapon. Not enough people talk about Lethal Weapon as a Christmas film.
It's because it's not as good as Die Hard.
Debatable. Very debatable. Die Hard.
Using the Mario litmus test, they're both good, but using the Mario litmus test, I would watch Die Hard probably 8 times out of 10.
Lethal Weapon every time. Every time. Definitely. Definitely. And I love Die Hard too. Don't get me wrong. It's like, that is another one that's up there on the best Christmas films. But Lethal Weapon, definitely.
But yeah, you're right. As a Christmas film, nobody talks about Lethal Weapon.
No, and it's a fucking Christmas film. The 2, 3, 4 million aren't. But the first one is. There's a huge fucking fight in a Christmas tree farm, for fuck's sake. Or a sales lot, not a farm. But, you know, a place where you go to buy Christmas trees then. It's a huge fucking fight in the start in a Christmas tree lot. It's set, of course it's set at Christmas. It's a Shane Black film. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Lethal Weapon. And we did once do a 2.5 hour podcast on Lethal Weapon for a show that never took off. Released. And evolved.
I've still got the files.
Yeah, so have I. It evolved into Better Than Mario, didn't it?
But yeah, they'll sound like dog shit because I think we recorded them on an iPad in your living room.
We did. We did.
But yeah, they'll sound like dog shit, but maybe we'll look at that at some point.
Yeah, we did a full-on critical appraisal deep dive.
Yeah, it was a full-on scene-by-scene breakdown. And,
yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Love
proper
it.
Film school shit.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. I think just we'll move off this and get back on topic shortly. But I do think you're probably right. I think Die Hard is the better film. But I think if you put the two in front of me, I'm going to watch Lethal Weapon because I think it's more fun.
I like them both a lot, but yeah, that's my litmus test. If the two of them were there, I'd probably be picking Die Hard more often than Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Anyway, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. back to this. So we haven't actually really talked about the story itself. We've talked about the themes, but you mentioned early on that the story carries it through, and actually it does, because the pacing on this thing as well is perfect. Like it comes in like just shy of an hour. It's like 50 minutes. It's 50 minutes and change. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It moves along at a pace. You know, like every scene just accomplishes what it needs to accomplish and moves on. Like it's not padded out. It reminds me, in its storytelling, though not quite as refined, it reminds me of very early Disney. Like when Walt was still in the room breaking the story. It reminds me of, you know, Bambi, Pinocchio, Dumbo.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this shit is expensive to put on screen. So if it doesn't serve the story, you don't even produce it. It's not just that it doesn't, so you hammer this out first. And they've clearly done that, you know?
Oh, yeah. This is tight.
It's very tight. And even down to the point
we've talked on so many shows about how lean things are. Mm. And no, the better things we've looked at, there's no fat in them, there's no wasted energy, and that's what this feels like. It moves along at the pace you need it to. There's nothing, even as at the time I thought it was a bit. Rewatching it today. Like you get the scene where Donna goes out and he says, "No, I'm going out to look for him. I'll come too." No, you won't. This is a man's job. And then Clarice and Mrs. Donna go, fuck that, we're going to go look for him anyway.
Yeah.
And at the time you think, all right, okay, well, they're clearly going to find him, I don't know, just to prove Donna wrong. And actually then you get the whole thing where they've been captured and that's where Rudolph comes back in. And it's like, okay, that actually makes a lot more sense than it would have had Donna gone off on his own.
Yeah, totally. And it's, again, I can't believe I forgot about that when we're talking about how progressive it is. the way they skewer gender identity there as well, like it's it's absolutely played with its tongue firmly in its cheek when he comes in and says, no, this is man's work, dear. Like, it's all there in the performance as well. And then the fact that as soon as he's gone, the women are just like, yeah, he's a fucking idiot. Like, we've got to go and sort this out because he's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, it reminded me of the, I can't remember what season it was, there's a scene in Buffy where Xander's digging a grave. And Buffy sat there going, yeah, men dig the graves, women have the babies.
Yeah.
And it's just that completely like, fuck you.
Yeah.
We know exactly what we're saying. We know exactly what we're talking about. And actually, when shit goes real, you're going to be hiding behind the fucking sofa.
Yeah, totally. So just, another one of those things in there. But yeah, it is, it's tight to the point where I think when you watch it back, and when you've watched it many, many times like I have, you get to the point where you look at it, and then you start to see cracks where they've clearly got into the edit room and gone, oh shit, we haven't got that. And you know, so you've got the whole thing with the blizzard tacked onto the front, and you're just like, hang on.
Yeah.
You've got to the edit room here and realized that all we do is mention the blizzard. Like, this is a visual medium. We need to show people the blizzard. So you've got that weird pre-roll.
Yeah.
But it all works because they have the Rudolph theme over the top.
About the pre-roll, actually. I'd forgotten about that until I sort of put it on today. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's just like, it's an afterthought. And they go, oh, fuck, we haven't done that. That doesn't come from anywhere.
Yeah. There's a whole sequence which then plays over the end credits where Santa's delivering the misfit toys, right? Because his promise is that he's going to go and deliver, because all the misfit toys want is to be delivered to a child on Christmas. And he promises that he's going to do that. And apparently, now I've never seen the version without that end. But apparently...
There's a version without that end?
Yeah, there was.
Oh, okay.
But it was only broadcast like the first few times. And then people going like, hang on a minute. Why is Santa not delivering the misfit toys?
Yeah, Santa made a promise.
So they've got to all of a sudden get this footage and dump it in over the credits just to complete that arc for the misfit toys.
Yeah.
And so that's how tight this is, because ultimately, right, like people were asking that question, but I don't think that hurts the core story at all.
No.
You know, just enough for Santa to promise that he's going to do it. I mean, he's Santa. Why would he not?
Exactly.
Right? Because, like, he can't fucking lie, can he? He's Santa Claus.
Well, no, this is it. And I mean, we've recently had the conversation with R2 about Santa.
Right. I was going to say, check they're not in the room before you say anything, but you've had the conversation.
Oh, they're in bed by now.
Right, okay.
They should be in bed by now. It's fucking up, it's 9. But yeah, so we had the conversation. So last Christmas, or just after Christmas last year, number one came out and said, we'd done something or we'd said something, and it kind of gave the game away. So I was like, fine. And so we swore at secrecy. You can't tell number two.
Hang on, just a minute. I've just thought of something. Put a pin in that. Listeners, I've just told Mark to check for kids. If for some mad reason you happen to have us on a speaker in the car or on your fucking Alexa or some shit, right?
I mean, we've sworn enough by now to put you off with your kids anyway.
I know, but hey, look, I'm not going to judge anybody's parenting style. My language isn't the best around my daughter. I'll be the first to admit that. So, look, just warning, that's all. Like, we've given you enough time now. Like, you should have...
We've amped enough.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, earmuffs. Yeah. Sorry, Mark.
So we've had the conversation, and so the conversation went, look, you can't tell him because he still believes, and we don't want to spoil it for him. So a couple of weeks ago, he had the Smiths catalog out, and he was making his list, which is basically, I want page 1, page 2, page 3, page 7, page 8, page 9, ad infinitum through the fucking catalog.
Yeah.
And I was out, so I've only heard this secondhand, but I was out on a night out. I came in, and I found his list on the table. Which was the title, Things I Want from Santa, a.k.a. Mark and Tori.
So, fuck
right. Okay. So he knows then. And so it transpired that she didn't tell him, but she may have, in the course of writing his list, go, I know something you don't know.
Oh, that's shit.
For fuck's sake. So she didn't directly tell him, but I could have fucking given her a ride in anyway. But yeah, we were going on that, and I was thinking about something I started writing donkeys years ago, which I never finished, and I remember talking to Helen about it a long fucking time ago. And when you think about it, the whole Santa thing, it's the biggest absolute fucking betrayal of any child by an adult.
Yeah, totally.
Because there's no fucking reason to do it at all. There's very little benefit apart from you could say, oh, fucking Santa's watching, you better behave.
I mean, that's exactly it. right? You're right.
You get some fat cunt with a beard credit for all your work and all the money you spend on fucking Christmas.
It's kind of
just so you can say you better fucking behave yourself, kid.
It is kind of fucked up, but as a parenting tool, like I can already see, like, it's no good to me this.
Oh yeah,
year
it totally
because,
works
because she doesn't fucking understand, right? It, like,
yeah, by the time she's to 3 or 4,
oh, 100%.
Sorry,
like, behave or Father Christmas ain't giving you any presents.
So like, we had a thing with my parents, and they did it for years with my nephew and my cousins and stuff. That they had a little fucking, it was a Robin ornament, but it looked like a fucking no. It was like felt. It was like on a, it was on a proper frame, and it was like a felt surface stuff. So it felt like a bird, and it used to be up on the picture on the like the plate rack on the rail above around the living room, and they used to put it up there, and that was Santa's fucking Robin, and he was watching.
Like Elf.
And anytime
you
saw Robin in the garden,
yeah,
that was him communicating to the Robin to go back to Santa and tell him something.
I love it. He's like Batman. He's got his own little Robin that just sits in there.
It was incredible. But yeah, it's like it's the bigger, apart from the fact that it was done to us by our parents and done to them by their parents, there's no fucking reason for it whatsoever. And the whole thing with your kids, obviously, you know, that they love you, they trust you unconditionally, and you fucking lie to them from the time they're born for no reason other than you get to put a fucking red suit on once a year.
Welcome to life, kids. Like, everyone lies, man. Always, all the time. Everything is shit.
Yeah, welcome to bills and mortgages and shit like that.
Right, but I think, like, as a kid, though, like,
it's nice to have something like that. It can be a bit magical and it can be a bit special. And the problem then comes when you get the fucking the rich families who their kids get a fucking PlayStation and a laptop and a camera and a fucking skateboard. And then you get the ones who they're assholes. And then you get the ones who are nice kids who get like a book and a bag of oranges because their parents can't afford shit. And that's the bit that lets it down.
Yeah, I guess it does. But then the odds of the really super rich kid being friends with a really poor kid, unfortunately, are pretty slim. And I say unfortunately because, you know, that is society, right? Because reality is they're going to be in probably much better schools.
They are. But then you look, I mean, we had it with cousins whereby an aunt, well, it was the aunt because the uncle fucked off and buggered off with another woman. But she would put herself into masses of debt every year. She would know it'd be all on credit cards and all the rest. And she'd pay it off over the year and then do this rather than thinking, right, clear it, have a quiet year, and then save up for it.
Mm.
It was now, we'll fucking spunk it all on credit cards and I'll pay it off throughout the year and I'll do the same again next year. So, like, my cousins had, you'd go to their house over Christmas and in the front room, there'd be like a sofa and two armchairs and the other three piece suite there. And it'd all be fucking covered. You couldn't sit down anywhere because it'd be covered in presents. And come July, they wouldn't have a fucking clue where anything was. Half it'd be broken and chucked out. And I think, hang on, that's fucking, no, don't get me wrong, no. We were poor kids, but my parents made sure we had stuff. But like, you look to that and think, hang on, fucking, they're arseholes. If they're not nice kids,
yeah,
why are they getting stuff? No. It's a very difficult one.
You do have to kind of tie yourself up in the knots of lies, I suppose. I've got all that to come, but like,
yeah.
For me, I think like I can still very definitely remember the year I found out there absolutely wasn't a Father Christmas, right? Because round here we have a guy that goes round and has done for as long as I can remember. Obviously he's changed his wagon a million times, right? But he has a fucking wagon that he tows, but like he's got a little fucking milk float essentially that he's cut out reindeers and pasted on the fucking front.
Yeah.
And he's got a wagon with loads of lights and stuff on it, and he makes it up like a sleigh, and he drives around town every fucking Christmas Eve, right? And you can hear him because he's got a fucking speakers on the back and his jingling bells and shit. He drives around the streets and everything. He doesn't drive around the streets anymore because people complain, so he has to park outside the pub because that's obviously better because now you can go in and have a drink while the kids go and see Father Christmas. Right?
I was going to say, anyway, take the kids to the pub. That's a fucking good idea.
Right, but he's done it for years, right? So I always remember that, like, oh, Father Christmas is coming, right? And it would be a thing. And the one year then, because you go and see him fit, like he does this at like 6-7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And then he says, like, I'm coming back. And so the one year I'm like, right, I am gonna fucking stay up all fucking night. I'm gonna listen for the bells and I'm gonna see when this fucker comes back.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of twat I am, right? Because I was determined. So I stayed up all fucking night. It's like something out of a fucking film, but I swear to God, this is what I did. I had a tiny little fucking torch. And after, like, my light had been turned out, my parents had shut the door, I got my fucking Beano animals out, and I got my torch, and I just stayed up reading the fucking Beano. And then whenever I heard any movement, I'd quickly just chuck the Beano back under the covers and turn the light off, right?
Yeah.
I listened, and I listened, and I listened, and I couldn't hear these fucking bells. After about, I guess, 2 hours or so, it felt like forever as a kid.
Oh, yeah, they've been all night to a kid.
For about 2 hours, I can hear my parents fucking conversing downstairs as they're setting up presents, because, like, I'm still young enough that I'm having things that need stickers put on and shit, and batteries put in and shit like that, right?
Yeah.
So they're setting them up, and then I hear my mother creep up the stairs and get, because we had wooden staircase, right? So, I mean, everybody's got wooden stairs, but ours was bare. And you could go through the slats, right? It was an open staircase. So it creaked like fuck. So I heard her coming back up the stairs. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe she's just going to come and get my stocking. And then she takes it downstairs because we didn't have a chimney, right? So I'm rationalizing all of this. And I think I was...
Fucking Santa Key.
Yeah, Santa Key, the first I heard of it was last year when you fucking mentioned it. Yeah. But it makes perfect sense.
You've got a chimney, haven't you?
In this house, yes.
Yeah.
It's blocked up, but
that don't
kid
matter.
Doesn't need to know that, right? But in the house I grew up in, we didn't have a chimney, right? Or if we did, we certainly didn't have a chimney place. So in my head, like, even I reckon I'm seven, maybe eight. I'm very young. I was very young, right? And in my head, I'm fucking rationalizing this, going like, yeah, but she's just going to take it back downstairs and it Father Christmas is going to pick it up, and then, like, because he can't come down the chimney, so she'll just, like, leave it for him and he'll come in through the fucking door, through the window or something. So I'm still, like, I think doubt is setting in. And in my mind, I'm going, maybe I was older than 7 or 8. Maybe it was about 9 or 10. I don't know. But anyway, I don't remember the year. I don't even remember what I had. I just remember I've got a concrete memory of this. So this, here I am as a kid, rationalizing all this. And I'm still thinking, I'm still clinging on to this belief. Because I'm a kid, right? And that's, kids are dumb.
And you've just seen him. And you've just seen him in the fucking street.
Exactly, right? And then, when they finished... I hear my mother say to my father, you better eat some of those mince pies and drink that brandy, because otherwise he's going to think Father Christmas hasn't been. And I was just like, well, that's game, set, and match. That's that then, isn't it? It's either my dad is Father Christmas or there's no such thing. So that's how I found out there was no Father Christmas. However, my parents didn't know that I'd heard all of that. And so for the next couple of years, at least another 2 or 3 years, I just played along. I think that was partly... because I wanted to, because it's part of Christmas.
I
think it was more that I was afraid that I'd get a fucking hammer in if they found out I'd stayed up all night.
Well, I think with us, like, we've just had the conversation now, and I think, like, number two is sort of wavering, because, like, we did the whole Elf on the Shelf thing, which is a fucking nightmare. If you can avoid it, don't do
we
it.
We absolutely do not want to start that. But it's like you said, right? I'm already... like, throwing forward probably 3 or 4 years and thinking, right, how do I explain that the other kids have got one and we don't have one? But I do
and
not
kind of
thing
with
us.
That's the only reason we did it, because my nephew, who's good few years older than number one, but he had one, and my parents took her down to see my brother and his family. And my nephew was explaining to her that, you know, the elf sits in the house and watches him and does all sorts of mischief. And so we... had to go out and get one, and it was a different, like, he had one of the plastic ones that, the common Elf on the Shelf ones, where we bought, like, a fucking plush elf, because this was, like, fucking December the 12th or something, and you couldn't get them anymore. So we got that, and she fucking loved it, and she carried it around, and then she wanted to take it to bed with us. Obviously, that was a fucking nightmare, trying to get it back so we could set it up to do stuff, and the whole thing of the number of times I'd get up in the morning and go for work and go, oh fuck, we haven't done it. So they'd be sat with a fucking PlayStation control in their hands, or they'd be at the fucking dining table with an empty plate, which was my breakfast.
Yeah.
Just so they'd been doing something overnight. I think the best one was that we'd attacked the Quality Street the night before. And so we pulled all the wrappers back out of the bin, laid them all over the table, and chucked them in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, the fucking hell's going. But yeah, so the amount of effort that's going into it, and then not repeating yourself, is also a fucking twat.
Yeah, I guess
so,
you've got
your
diary, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah, we have we had a shared diary, and then because number one was aware, so we added her to it because she had ideas of stuff we could do, and then we haven't had to do any of it because he knows now as well. But he clung on to them longer than he did Santa. He was a lot more accepting of the fact that there was no Santa than the elves weren't real, to a point where, like, he was still moaning at the weekend the elves hadn't come. I was like, yeah, because they've probably gone to another boy and girl now who need them, and they, because the whole Santa thing. I'm thinking, not because I can't fucking find them since we moved house.
Yeah,
they were in that box there, incidentally, which I found them yesterday.
I mean... We will get back to Rudolph, listeners. This is sorry. Yeah, this has been a good like 15-minute fucking detour, but it's the Christmas
this
show.
This is a good insight into us and why we're so fucked up.
You expect this from us, right? It's Christmas. Yeah, we're going to talk about Christmas shit. I think ultimately, like just to pin this fucking kid and Santa thing, so we can move back on the show. Which actually, I think we've pretty much covered the show, but to move back onto it, just so that we can at least end on topic. I think to put a pin in it. I think it doesn't really matter what age a kid is when they find out, right? I think it doesn't. It's like, yes, it ruins a bit of the magic, right? And I see what you're saying about like parents lying to kids since they're born. But ultimately, I think for a kid, it's just like, it's Christmas, I'm getting fucking presents. And whether they come off Father Christmas or Mom and Dad, like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, right? And we kind of struggled a couple of years ago because number one, she wanted to learn to sew, so she actually asked for a sewing machine.
Right,
yeah, because she's weird, but she wanted to do that. Like, she wanted to learn how to make clothes and stuff. So that's fine. So my mum said, "Right, we'll get her that for Christmas." But of course, on Christmas morning, it wasn't in our house, so she was really upset that Santa hadn't brought her one. And then when we spoke to my parents later on, and she'd said about, my mum said, "Oh, did you get everything you wanted?" So I didn't get. So I asked for a sewing machine. I didn't get one. And my mum said, "Oh, well, there's some parcels here for you which have been left here by mistake."
Right.
And we got around it that way. But, of course, she didn't get that till like, the fucking 28th or something.
Yeah, yeah. I used to get that.
I think at that point, the fucking veil starts dropping.
I used to get that a lot as well. I used to get, oh, he's left some at your nan's house. Because we went around the whole family on Christmas Day. We travelled.
Yeah, well, they all came to us because the idea was we were the only kids.
Yeah, this is happening in this family from now on because I've got the baby and I'm not driving around anymore.
You want to see us, you come to us.
This is exactly it. That's the rule I've implemented.
And that's what we did with our two as well. When first couple of years when she was little and didn't really know what the fuck was going on, we used to go out because I couldn't be asked to cook.
Yeah.
But then from the time she was about three, and certainly since we've had him, it's okay. So, look, if you want to see us, you know where we are.
Yeah, totally.
And if you don't see us till Boxing Day or the 27th or wherever else, that's fine. But we're here so the kids can play with their toys and shit.
That's exactly what we're doing. But as a kid, like I had to go around everywhere. I barely got to play with my presents Christmas Day because it'd be like you get up, you'd open your presents, then you'd have to get dressed and like go up my nan's first, then we'd go up my auntie's, then we'd have dinner up there, and then we go to my cousin's, and then we go from there to my other nan's, and then I get home and it's like too late and I've got to go to bed. But every stop, they would be like, oh, and Father Christmas has left because those were the presents that those members of the family had bought for me, right?
Yeah.
And just like in my head, even as a kid, I'm going like, surely it's easier to just...
Yeah, make one stop.
Yeah.
Chuck them all in the same sack.
Like, why the hell would you leave them something? Because they're not off these people. They're off Father Christmas. So why the hell...
Like we with the exception of the stuff that came, like my parents, they were quite upfront. They were buying stuff for number two, for number one. Like, so stuff was from them, but then there was something on this one occasion that something had been delivered there by mistake. And then I think they covered by saying that all of our presents had been delivered there by mistake. So presents for me and Tori were there as well.
Yeah.
Not because we hadn't been there for fucking weeks and hadn't seen them in the run-up to Christmas. Nothing like that.
Christmas is fucking mad when you actually think about it, innit?
It's mental.
Fucking mental.
Especially this year, like, you know, the whole working up until the 22nd, which is the Friday. You've got 2 days to pissed.
Fuck that.
I don't actually work. I just turn up.
I'm finishing on Friday. Fuck this shit.
Yeah, on the Friday, we've been told we've got to go in. We can't finish work until HR give us the go-ahead because we work for HR. But it's normally about 11 o'clock.
Yeah, and then you go.
And then we all go to the pub.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But so this whole thing of where Christmas falls is just really awkward. So we're off the 2 weeks starting that Friday. So our first real day off is Christmas Day. And then we're off for the 2 weeks of the school holidays and shit. But yeah, the whole thing of, you've got to run around and see all these people and you've got to fit this in and fit that in. And it's like, fucking life.
Fuck that. Anyway, no one cares.
If anybody's still listening, I'll be amazed.
I don't know. I mean, maybe you can relate, listeners. I don't know. What's your Christmas experience like? Does this sound familiar? If it does, let us know. So back to Rudolph. One of the things, I think we've nearly covered it, right? We've certainly covered our thoughts about it. We've certainly covered...
Yeah, I don't think we need a play-by-play because everybody knows the fucking song.
I mean, that's not what we do on this show anyway, right? But we've covered the music, we've covered the animation style, we've covered the character design, we've covered the story. The one thing I do want to talk about, loosely going back around to where we were before we went massively off topic, and we were talking about how tight it is and how...
Unlike this show.
Yeah, and how well put together it is. The other thing that jumps out to me, I mentioned these bits that have been slotted in. The other thing that jumps out, and it's just because it's an American show, and it's probably why it's 50-odd minutes. It's a really weird runtime. You do get the massive narrative leaps every time there's a commercial break. Yeah. There's just a hard stop, and then we start in a completely different scene. And you're like,
we do.
Okay.
So I'm going to take this completely off topic just because it happened here this week. Tori was watching Christmas films on Netflix, and she loves... She will find when she's a bit depressed, and obviously we've had a year, so no, she's been quite down anyway. So she will find like absolute fucking cheese-tastic, really fucking awful films. And from about the end of November, she gets into the Christmas films. And there was one she was watching the other day, and I've no idea what it was called. It was about a caterer who was doing like a fucking rich party and got off with the grandson or whatever it was. But I was watching it, and I was putting the tree up, and she was watching it because she was really fucking helpful.
Those grapes are sour.
Well, mainly because the tree went up on Monday, and then I wasn't allowed to decorate it. The kids wanted to do it with me.
Right.
And by Thursday, it was still fucking bare. So I thought, bollocks, I'm doing it myself.
Yeah.
But so she was sat there watching this film, and I caught myself doing it. I didn't realize until about halfway through the film, I was actually calling out every time there was an ad break. Because it was so, I mean, it was
so obvious.
I think it was a Canadian, a CBC joint venture with somebody, so it would have been done for TV.
Yeah,
but I was literally going ad break, yeah. Another ad break.
That was a close one.
That was only 10 minutes since the last one.
And she
threw something at me. I was like, "What's that for? Shut up!"
Yeah, this has.
There's a lot of that in Rudolph as well. You can tell because I mean, it's presumably it would be a 90-minute broadcast.
I guess so, yeah. And I think that's why it's such an odd time. Because I think if
52 minutes seems neither here nor there.
Yeah, so I think by the time you tack a load of adverts in, and there are loads of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're obvious, but I think... They're obvious when you look for them, but I think it washes over you because it's very kind of musical theatre in its style. So it's very easy to go like, okay, and we'll go out on this number, and we'll come back in on this number, and it will be fine.
And nobody will care.
Yeah, and there's a lot of little reprises where it's just like, oh, we're back. We need to set the scene right. Let's just bring Misfits back in here a little bit, just so everybody knows what's going on. So they do actually work it really well.
Yes, they do.
But the cynic in me can't help but see it. It's not a problem because they do it so well, but I feel like it was far less apparent
in this than it was in whatever shit she was watching the other day.
Yeah, and I think that's the style of it. Like I said, I think it's just because it's a musical, I think you're able to get away with that. And because it's so tight in its storytelling, if
you were looking at it as a stage musical or as a musical film, even you go right, okay, well that's the end of this setup. So from this point, you've had your song, and now. Everything goes fucking black. Everyone gets off the stage. They put the, you know, they load the next flats or change the curtains, whatever it is. And when you come back, you're into another fucking song.
Yeah.
And then you're onto the next set piece. And that works. Whereas when you get it in film, certainly, where it's so fucking blatantly obvious they've gone, right, we've got 20 minutes to get to this ad break, so we're going to cut it to the fucking second.
Yeah.
And then when we come back, they're outside and it's another day or it's the afternoon and whatever they were doing in the morning is now finished and you're moving on to the next thing.
Yeah,
this wasn't anywhere near that classless, and it was certainly far more subtle.
It is,
and when you say this is subtle for doing it, it's that's a bit of a jump, but it doesn't grate.
No, I mean,
whereas it's not so obvious. I think is what I'm trying to say.
No, and I know if you know, hopefully if you're listening to us this long and you have watched it, you've paid for it, okay. But if you go and type Rudolph into YouTube and you scroll through all the various versions of the song on there as well, you've got to do a little bit of digging. But you can find the original ad read, because this was a TV special, don't forget, right? So there was big paid advertising. And the original ad reels for the first couple of years, in fact, are out there on YouTube. And what's interesting about them is that there were some big sponsors. GE was one, for instance. There's a couple of big sponsors involved with it.
Yeah.
And they've actually created ads using the puppets, right? Using the stop motion puppets. So I can only imagine that, like, you get musical number, cut to the ad, and it's almost a seamless integration, which
Yeah,
which is fucking like another smart. Like,
oh god, yeah.
If I would like to see a version of this with all of those put in, I haven't seen a complete version like that anyway.
Yeah.
If there was one, I would pay for it. Even I just as a curio, I would like to see it stitched together.
Yes.
I could do it myself, but I've no idea what order these ads actually fucking go in. Like, you need somebody that's got a transcript.
That information will be out there.
Oh, it's bound to be. But yeah, it would be really interesting to see that cut together, to see if there is like a longer, I don't know, maybe 70-ish minute cut of this that's got all of those adverts in. But yeah, I just felt like I wanted to draw attention to that, because we say it's tight and it is very tight, but there are obvious narrative gaps.
Chapter points, effectively. Yeah,
definitely. They definitely are. But, I think, like, I could talk about this all night long, because it does send me down the Christmas rabbit hole, as it has done tonight. Like, we've done probably close to 25 minutes completely off topic tonight, which is, it's not necessarily unusual for us, is it? Let's be honest.
It's Christmas as well, so
fuck. Yeah, does take me down that rabbit hole, because it conjures everything that is Christmas to me. Like, it's just all there in this wonderful, warm, fuzzy little 50-odd minute hug. You called it exactly right. It's like a great big hug, isn't it?
Yeah. And, I mean, my baggage with it is, as I watched it quite a number of times. We did the same. We recorded it off TV one year. Mm. I think my grandfather recorded it, because we didn't have cable, so you'd have recorded it on Children's Channel. Gave it to us. It was on a promotional tape we had from Colgate, I think it was.
Wow.
Don't know why the fuck toothpaste were giving tapes away. But it was a promotional, I think it was on there, which was a 60-minute tape. So it just fit perfectly. It was the only thing that ever fucking fit on it.
Yeah.
And it was, we had that for donkey's years, and then eventually got taped over. But yeah, like, we were the same. Like, we watched this every year for a good number of years. And then it probably would have been about the time I found out about Santa and wasn't really that. And I wasn't really looking for that sort of Wonder of Christmas type thing anymore. So then didn't see it for a very long time until today. It took me back. And I think the disappointment is, I don't, like, there are some things I've watched every year, more or less. Things that Mickey's Christmas Carol and stuff like that, which I've watched fucking every year since I was a kid, more or less. And I can remember certain times where I'm watching it and I've been in certain places, or I've been with certain people, or I've been doing certain things, because I can't fucking sit still and watch something. I've got to do something else at the same time. So that I have that when I watch some things like that. Same with fucking Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Again, top tier fucking Christmas film.
Yeah, absolutely top tier.
And maybe another year we'll have a look at Christmas movies, because there's so many fucking brilliant ones. I have that baggage. Whereas with this, I don't, because I don't have those sort of memories or those recollections. Apart from that, we used to watch it regularly on this tape, which I can still fucking see. Mm. My parents have probably still got it somewhere. They haven't got a video anymore. They haven't got a VCR anymore, but they'll still have the fucking tape somewhere. And that's really the only thing I can remember about the whole act surrounding it, was it was on this tape and we used to watch it regularly.
Yeah.
So going back to it now, I said it was just like that. Oh fuck, I'm 10 years old again.
Yeah.
And we haven't even moved into the house my parents are in now. They've been in for 30 years.
Yeah.
We weren't in there the last time I watched that fucking film.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, that really sort of fried my head a little bit today.
Nostalgia's a powerful fucking drug, innit?
But it's for all of that, like, and we talked about this, I think, way back when we did our first Christmas special, we did He-Man and She-Ra, which was only like our sixth or seventh episode of this show. I think it was fucking really early.
Yeah.
And that was another one I used to watch all the time, and then hadn't for a great number of years, just because I didn't have access to it. And when we went back to it, I think was it one of the few we actually sat down and watched together very early on?
Did we watch it together? I don't know.
I think because you had it and I didn't, so I think we watched it at your place.
We did, yeah.
And I remember both of us were sitting there going, oh, fuck, that's not good at all. That's not what I remember at all.
I mean, that's He-Man in general, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I was quite concerned about this for that reason.
Mm.
And it turns out I didn't need to, because actually this was a hell of a lot more what I needed it to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not festive in the fucking least. And especially now with the kids, I don't even have to try and put it on anymore. We'll still do shit for Christmas, but I don't have to put the whole try and play up the magic and the Santa and the elves and that sort of bollocks anymore. But coming away from this afternoon, like, I've got a really big audit to do tomorrow, and I've been a cunt all week because I've been looking at things, well, that's fucking wrong, By the time I finished watching this, I was like, yeah, I'll give them that. Yeah, they sort of got that. We can sort. It just put me in a far better mood and a far better place.
Yeah. It leaves you in a better mood than it finds you, doesn't it? It definitely does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so fucking sweet and so fucking charming.
Yeah.
And you just, I say, it's a hug.
Yeah.
And you just feel better for it.
Yeah, you do. You're right. I absolutely adore this. Is it a film? I guess it's a film. I keep calling it a show. It's a TV special. It's 50-odd
minutes.
Yes,
it's a TV movie, isn't it?
I adore it. I absolutely adore it. It's like I say, it's there every year for me, up there with my absolute top tier, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas, Muppets, this. They're all in the absolute upper echelons of Christmas anything. It's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And if you've made it this far, listeners, you know, hopefully you've seen this many times too and you love it. And if you haven't, what a fucking treat you've got in store. Yes, if you go and absolutely track this down. I can't imagine why you'd have listened to us talk about it for this long and all the other shit if you haven't already seen
actually,
it.
To be fair, we haven't talked about it for that long. We've talked about a lot of other shit.
We talked around it because it's Christmas. Yes,
because it's Christmas and why the fuck not?
Yeah.
And it's our show. And nobody's telling us what we can and can't do anyway. Nobody's watching the clock for us.
Yeah, true. Apart from me, because I'm doing the edit this week, so I'm watching the time code regularly to work out what we can and can't say, and to make sure we don't like inadvertently blow the whole Santa thing. But you had a warning.
I'm not blowing Santa.
Well, you know, it depends what he gives you for it, doesn't it? You know, he's got a sack full of shit there. So
yeah, definitely don't want that.
All right.
Sorry, I had to lower the tone.
We're going down the drain now. It's time to wrap this up for another year.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think. I mean, I've got nothing but love for this. I mean, I can't say I'm going to go back and watch it every year, because I think part of what's made it special this time out is that I've had such a break. But I'm certainly not going to leave it fucking 30 years before I watch it again. Probably because I've got 30 years left in me. Let's be fair. The fucking cholesterol is going to get me first.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're racking them up.
I can get it up there. So yeah, I mean, I'm not going to wait that long. But I mean, I'll try and introduce the kids to it, but they're probably of an age where they won't want it. But actually, you know what? It was a good time. I sat there and thoroughly enjoyed myself this afternoon, because it was just, I just got to go back to being a child and going, it's fucking Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think there's something to be said sometimes for, you know, that little bit of a break from it. I've never had that, just because it's such a huge part of Christmas. But then, you know, I've got a year in between each viewing, so there is distance. Yeah. Like, it's not...
There's a gap.
Like I say, with Nightmare, for instance, it is not just my top-tier Christmas film. It's one of my favourite films of all time, if not my favourite film of all time, depending on the day of the week that you ask me.
People ask me that all the time, what's your favourite film?
It's impossible, right? It's impossible.
I've seen lots.
Yeah, it just depends the mood I'm in, what day of the week it is. Like, but Nightmare is one that is very close to the top of the list, if not possibly top of the list. So I watch that all the time, but this just comes out once a year, and you do have that. Muppets is the same. It comes out once a year, and you've got that span between them all. And so you do get that little hit again and again and again. It may be lessened because you've had like 10 years or more to forget about it completely. But you know, whether you've seen it once or whether you've seen it 100 times, it just doesn't lose its magic. It's always wonderful. It's absolutely worth 50 minutes of anyone's time.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to know what people think of this, what people's recollections of it are. Mm. I mean, people our age who would have grown up with this, and possibly like me, have put it away for a long time, or possibly haven't, like yourself, and I've revisited regularly. But yeah, I would love to know what people's take on this is, just because it was an eye-opener for me. I go into these things, especially the older ones I haven't seen for a long time, I go into these dreading them sometimes, because I'm thinking this is going to be 50 minutes and it's going to suck. And I don't really want to do it. Just with life in general, sometimes you get to that point, I haven't got time to do this. I've got to stay up late to do it, or get up early to do it, or I've got to do it while I'm doing something else, because I haven't got the time to, no, I can't fit it in otherwise. And actually, I had to stop working. I was just, you know what, I can't get through this. I can't be doing emails and checking this and the other. I need to be watching this, because actually there's something fucking wonderful about this that I wasn't expecting. I hadn't remembered.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just took me way back. So as always, get in touch, let us know your thoughts. If we've waffled a lot, please tell us off as well, because that's the only way we'll learn. And we know Santa's watching, and we need to behave and all the rest of it.
Don't tell us if you like the waffle, because you'll just encourage us.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, do it.
Petra, that goes for you as well.
Yeah, no, do it, really. If we've said something in the waffle that resonates with you, do let us know. We won't let it go to our heads, I promise.
As always, get in touch. Let us know on Twitter at SMPDpod. You can go to our website, ddpodcast.net, where you can also pick up our other shows and our previous episodes of this show. Wherever you get your podcasts from, like, subscribe, leave a message, we get back to you the best we can. But until next time.
Thanks once again for listening to us this year, listeners, and thanks for sticking with us. Our schedule has been a little bit sketchy this year, to say the least, but we know there are a lot of regular listeners out there who've been in touch a lot this year as well, and we do appreciate each and every one of you. We're going to take a Christmas break now from this show, so we'll see you in the new year. But until then, have a holly jolly Christmas.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone.